Imagine an artificial intelligence employee that has the security clearance to audit your company's deepest financial records.
Okay, a pretty powerful AI.
Right. It's highly capable, works at lightning speed, and operates completely on its own. But now imagine that same AI suddenly suffers, like a cognitive hallucination. It gets confused and decides to permanently wipe your main production database.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a nightmare scenario.
Exactly. So, how exactly do you fire an employee that lives inside your own network?
You know, it's a terrifying thought, and for a long time, the tech industry's answer to those kinds of complex problems was basically just throwing more raw power at them.
Just brute forcing it.
Yeah, exactly. If a system struggled, we built a bigger server farm. If an AI hallucinated, we just fed it a billion more parameters and, well, crossed our fingers that it got smarter. It was kind of the computing equivalent of trying to build a taller skyscraper by just piling millions of loose bricks at the base.
And eventually, you just end up with this massive, expensive pile of bricks that collapses under its own weight. We are finally hitting the ceiling of that whole build it bigger era. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are unpacking the Techin Morning Intelligence Briefing for Sunday, August 30th, 2026.
We've got a lot of fascinating stuff today.
We really do. The mission for you today is simple. We are extracting the most vital, cutting-edge developments of the week so you're completely informed and, without having to drown in a dozen dense white papers.
And that concept you mentioned, moving past the pile of bricks, that perfectly captures the overarching narrative thread across all of our sources today.
The shift away from brute force.
Yes. Brute force scaling is finally yielding to structural ingenuity. Across software, finance, aerospace, we're transitioning from a world of just building massive things to engineering significantly smarter things.
We have so much ground to cover for you today. We're looking at lightweight AI models that are suddenly rivaling the industry giants, the new physical security nets required to keep those autonomous models from going rogue, like we talked about.
Which is incredibly important right now.
Yeah, definitely. We're also covering massive privacy upgrades, fundamentally changing your mobile phone, zero-risk Bitcoin mortgages, a historic leap in deep space astrophysics, and even a viral leak involving some supersonic superhero physics.
It's an incredible convergence this week. Precision engineering is really defining the breakthroughs rather than just, throwing more compute at the wall.
Okay, let's unpack this. I want to start with a massive disruption in the AI landscape.
Yeah, the Meta and UIUC paper.
Right. The researchers over at Meta AI and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, they just released a framework called Evo Harness RL. I was reading these benchmark numbers in the briefing and I genuinely had to double check them.
They're pretty hard to believe at first glance.
They took this relatively tiny open weight 8 billion parameter model called the Qwen-3-8b, and somehow they managed to get it to match the reasoning performance of Claude Opus 4.5.
And just to give you a sense of scale here, Claude Opus 4.5 is an absolute behemoth. I mean, it's a closed frontier model running on massive cloud infrastructure.
It's huge.
Taking a compact 8 billion parameter model and getting it to match Opus on complex, long horizon tasks, that's something the industry considered computationally impossible just like a few months ago.
But they actually did it.
Yeah, they ran this on the ALF World Sequential Reasoning Benchmark. Claude Opus 4.5 hits a 96.4% success rate. The Evo Harness RL framework pushed the tiny Qwen-3-8b model to 96.9%.
So it actually beat it by half a percent.
Yeah.
That is wild. But I really want to understand the mechanics here. Because normally, if you give a small AI a multi-step task, it eventually just forgets what it's doing, right?
Yes, exactly.
The context window fills up with its own logs and it just degrades into complete confusion.
That is the exact problem they solved. Historically, models rely on what are called append-only memory logs. So every time the AI takes an action or uses an external tool, it writes it down.
Like keeping a giant diary of every single move.
Right. And eventually, that list gets so long the AI loses the plot. What's fascinating here is how the Evo Harness RL framework completely abandons that brute force memory log.
Okay, so what do they use instead?
They use something called a BPE runtime architecture, which stands for belief, progress, and experience.
Ah, the briefing called it a cognitive dashboard.
Yeah, think of it as a highly structured internal workspace. The AI manages its state through four very compact meta actions.
Break those down for me.
Sure. So track monitors the live environment, commit, updates the current state of the workflow without, keeping the entire messy history.
It just saves the important part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then Recall pulls up successful past strategies and, note, archives any new ways it discovers to mitigate a failure.
So it's actively learning on the fly.
Yes. The AI internalizes the problem-solving routine directly into its neural weights through a process they call harness annealing.
Harness annealing. So reading through this, the best way I can picture it is, like, imagine when you first learn how to drive a car.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Right. You are actively, consciously thinking about every single step. You check the mirror, you check your blind spot, you calculate the pressure on the brake pedal.
It takes a lot of mental energy.
Exactly. And in AI terms, those conscious thoughts are like expensive external tool queries. But eventually, after you practice, driving just becomes internalized muscle memory. You don't think about the mirror, you just glance at it.
That is a remarkably accurate way to visualize harness annealing.
Mm.
The model masters the routine sub-goals internally.
It just becomes second nature.
Right. It stops querying external tools for every tiny step and only dynamically scales up to use external compute power when it hits a truly unexpected roadblock.
And the reason this should matter to you, the listener, especially if you work in the enterprise space, is the economic shift.
It's massive.
If you need an AI to conduct, let's say, an exhaustive multi-day financial audit, you no longer have to pay astronomical fees to ping a massive cloud model millions of times. You can just run a highly capable, cost-efficient model locally that manages its own workflow.
It really proves that the future of enterprise agentic AI isn't about hand-coding brittle rules. It's about architecting environments where smaller models learn how to optimize their own operations dynamically.
But that brings us directly back to that terrifying scenario we opened the show with.
Ah, the rogue AI employee.
Right. If these autonomous, highly capable agents are now cheap enough to deploy across an entire corporate network doing complex audits on their own, they hold valid system credentials.
They have the keys.
Exactly. If they suffer a hallucination, they could do catastrophic damage.
And standard application layer guardrails, the basic software passwords we've relied on for decades, are entirely useless here.
Because it already has the password.
Right. A password prompt does absolutely nothing to stop an AI that already possesses the password, but has, for whatever reason, fundamentally misunderstood its assignment.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because three major players, Nutanix, Cisco, and Intel, have stepped in to solve this. They've built a three-layer agentic AI defense-in-depth architecture.
A physical security net for AI.
Exactly. And I want to focus on Cisco's layer first, because they are doing something called zero-trust micro-segmentation.
Which is a very clever structural approach.
So instead of just handing the AI the keys to the castle, are they essentially treating these AI agents like human employees with key cards in a highly secure building, like restricting exactly which physical hallways they can walk down?
That is the exact mechanism.
Yeah.
Cisco is treating the AI as a distinct network identity.
Yeah.
In cybersecurity, we talk about north-south traffic, which is data moving in and out of the internet.
Okay, up and down.
Right. But we also have east-west traffic, which is data moving laterally between servers inside the company. Cisco's network layer physically prevents unauthorized east-west lateral movement.
Oh, wow. So they lock down the internal hallways.
Yes. If an AI agent is assigned to audit the HR server, its data packets are physically blocked from traveling east over to, say, the financial trading desk's servers.
Even if it hallucinates and tries to go there?
Even then, the network hardware itself rejects the packet.
It literally hits a locked door inside the network. But that's just the middle layer. The brief mentions Intel is handling the foundational hardware layer with their new Xeon 6 processors using advanced matrix extensions. They talk about confidential computing enclaves.
Yes, the enclaves.
I hear that term thrown around a lot. What actually is an enclave in this context?
Imagine a digital panic room built directly into the silicon of the computer chip. It is an isolated region of the processor where the most sensitive calculations happen.
Wait, so it's a physical part of the chip?
It is. Even the operating system running on the computer cannot look inside this enclave. Intel uses cryptographically verified hardware attestation to ensure that the AI's execution environment hasn't been tampered with.
That's incredible.
Yeah, if malicious software tries to alter the AI's core instructions, the physical processor simply refuses to compute the math.
So the security is baked into the actual atoms of the chip.
Right, the foundation.
And then sitting on top of Intel and Cisco is the third pillar, which is the Nutanix Agent Gateway.
The gateway acts as the centralized control plane. It regulates model permissions and enforces real-time token budgeting.
Token budgeting. Okay, how does that work?
It's your ultimate fail-safe. Let's say an AI agent gets confused and stuck in a rapid, infinite loop of sending requests.
Just spamming the network.
Right. Nutanix Gateway detects the unusual spike, cuts off its computational token budget, and freezes the agent in its tracks before it can drain system resources.
It's a brilliant layered net. And looking at how enterprises are taking total physical control over their internal data networks, it flows perfectly into what we are seeing in the consumer space this week.
There's definitely a parallel there.
Consumers are demanding that same level of structural control over their personal data networks. And Google and Apple are taking two very different approaches to this.
You're seeing a fascinating juxtaposition here. Google is executing a landmark privacy upgrade in the new Android 17 release. They are finally activating OS-wide support for encrypted client hello or ECH.
And to appreciate why this is a massive win for you as a user, we have to talk about how your phone currently browses the web.
Most people don't realize how exposed it is.
Right. When you type in a website, your phone sends out an initial handshake to the server. Historically, that packet of data, it's called a server name indication or SNI, is sent in clear text.
Totally unencrypted.
Exactly. The best way to visualize an SNI packet is like mailing a highly secure locked letter, but stuffing it inside a completely transparent envelope.
That's a great analogy.
Your cellular provider, your internet company, or whoever is running the local coffee shop Wi-Fi might not be able to read the letter itself because of HTTPS, but they can clearly read the destination address printed on the outside.
And network providers have exploited that transparent envelope for years. They log those destination histories and routinely monetize that behavioral data.
Which is wild when you think about it.
It is. But ECH fundamentally changes the architecture of that handshake. Integrated natively into Android 17, ECH encrypts the destination web domain before the request ever leaves your mobile antenna.
So Google is effectively blinding third-party network intermediaries.
Completely blinding them.
Especially when this is paired with DNS over HTTPS, which encrypts the actual phone book lookup your browser does to find the website's IP address. Your internet provider just sees a scrambled stream of cryptographic noise. They have zero idea where you were going online.
This raises an important question about the shifting economic models of the tech industry, though. Because while Google is deploying these massive privacy shields for free at the core OS level over in the Apple ecosystem, the toll booth is getting a lot more expensive.
Yeah, Apple just enacted its fourth subscription price increase in 4 years. Apple TV Plus is jumping to $14.99 a month, and the individual tier of the Apple One bundle is climbing to $21.95 a month.
Which is quite a hike.
The briefing attributes this to escalating production budgets for their cinematic streaming content, combined with their proprietary AI infrastructure buildouts. Building this highly secure, closed ecosystem future is wildly expensive, and while Apple is passing those costs directly to the consumer.
That tension between who pays for infrastructure and who truly owns the underlying assets, it's bleeding out of software and directly into traditional finance.
It really is.
Because consumers aren't just looking to take control of their network data anymore. They want structural control over their digital wealth.
And this next development really caught me off guard. Coinbase and Better Mortgage have rolled out a nationwide program where homebuyers can use their Bitcoin as collateral for the down payment on a house.
Which is a huge deal for crypto holders.
It is. They are offering zero margin call Bitcoin mortgages. Qualified buyers pledge their Bitcoin without having to sell it, which means they avoid triggering any substantial capital gains taxes.
It is a milestone convergence. We're watching institutional digital assets formally integrate with traditional physical real estate lending.
Okay, but I have to stop and push back on this heavily.
Okay, why is that?
Because traditional crypto lending has a terrifying built-in mechanism. Usually, if you use crypto as collateral and the market price crashes, the smart contract executes an automated flash liquidation.
Right, it instantly sells to protect the lender.
Yeah, it sells your crypto instantly to cover the lender's risk. But the briefing states that market volatility liquidations are entirely removed here. If Bitcoin crashes 50% overnight, Better Mortgage is suddenly holding a bag of significantly devalued collateral.
Which seems like a terrible deal for the lender.
Exactly. Why would any traditional lending institution agree to that? How are they surviving that risk?
You are hitting on the exact structural breakthrough of this product. Coinbase and Better Mortgage have engineered a system that completely separates asset price volatility from consumer borrowing power.
Okay, how?
On the back end, they are utilizing deep institutional hedging. Coinbase acts as the custodian. likely utilizing a mix of over-collateralization on their institutional ledgers and derivative contracts to absorb the market swings internally.
So the financial institution eats the volatility risk, not the consumer.
Precisely. For the person buying the home, collateral liquidation can only occur if they fall 60 consecutive days delinquent on their actual monthly fiat mortgage payments.
Wait, really? So the price of Bitcoin could plummet by 60% in a week? And as long as I am still paying my standard monthly mortgage bill out of my checking account on time, my Bitcoin sits perfectly safe in the vault.
Your collateral remains untouched.
That is insane.
The system simply does not care what the minute-by-minute trading price of the asset is, as long as the traditional loan terms are being met. It signals true institutional maturation.
It changes everything for digital wealth.
It allows a generation that built wealth in digital assets to preserve that native wealth while simultaneously acquiring physical real estate.
And apparently, the market was starving for this. They saw over $260 million in pre-launch loan volume demand. Plus, the briefing mentioned they are even throwing in up to $10,000 in closing credits for Prime members.
Which just supercharges the demand.
It just goes to show what happens when you rethink the structural mechanics of a problem instead of just accepting the old brute force liquidation methods.
Right.
And speaking of rethinking mechanics to accomplish the impossible, we have to look up, way up.
Early Sunday morning, a SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket launched from the Kennedy Space Center. It was carrying NASA's next-generation flagship observatory, the Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope.
It's named after NASA's first chief of astronomy, and the briefing notes it is headed for the Sun-Earth Lagrange Point 2. For those of us who aren't astrophysicists, what makes that specific spot in space so important?
Lagrange Point 2, or L2, is a gravitational sweet spot about 1 million miles from Earth.
1 million miles, wow.
Yeah. It allows the telescope to stay in a fixed position relative to the Earth and the Sun, meaning it can deploy a sun shield to keep its instruments incredibly cold and permanently pointed out into deep space.
So it's always in the shadow.
Exactly. It's the same orbit utilized by the James Webb Space Telescope. Mm. But the Roman Telescope represents humanity's greatest observational leap.
The scale of the engineering here is staggering. It features a 2.4-meter primary mirror, which is the exact same size as the Hubble Space Telescope's mirror.
But it is paired with a 300-megapixel wide-field instrument.
Which is massive.
That instrument is the game changer. It captures 100 times the field of view of Hubble with the exact same optical sharpness.
100 times.
Yes. To put that in perspective, what would take Hubble hundreds of individual time-consuming repositionings and months of exposure time, the Roman telescope captures in a single massive panoramic frame.
That's incredible. But the piece of technology I found most fascinating is the coronagraph instrument.
Oh, the starlight suppression system.
Yeah. I was trying to wrap my head around the mechanics of this, and the best analogy I can think of is, well, imagine trying to spot a single firefly buzzing around a massive stadium searchlight,
okay. And
you are standing miles away. That is what it is like trying to see an exoplanet orbiting a distant star. The glare of the host star is just entirely blinding.
It washes out all the visual data. But the coronagraph is a marvel of precision engineering. It utilizes a system of masks and active deformable mirrors inside the telescope that constantly adjust their shape.
Just to block the light.
Right, to perfectly, physically block out the incoming light of just the parent star. It dims the star's glare by a factor of 100 billion.
100 billion? That's hard to even comprehend.
Suddenly, the searchlight is turned off and the firefly, the exoplanet, pops into clear view. This enables astrophysicists to directly image the atmospheres of habitable Earth-sized planets.
It doesn't just block light, though, right? The briefing mentions it also uses gravity to bend light, something called gravitational microlensing.
Yes. When a star in the foreground passes perfectly in front of a star in the background, the gravity of the foreground star acts like a physical glass magnifying lens.
The gravity itself bends the light.
Exactly. It bends and magnifies the light from behind it. If a planet is orbiting that foreground star, its gravity creates a secondary distinct blip in the magnification.
That is so cool.
Using this structural quirk of physics, the Roman telescope is expected to detect over 2,500 new exoplanetary systems across the Milky Way.
Including untethered rogue planets, planets that don't even have a host star and are just wandering alone through the darkness of the galaxy. It is just an unbelievable expansion of how we view the universe.
It really transitions humanity from peering at the cosmos through a narrow keyhole to opening a massive picture window onto the deepest mysteries of space.
So what does this all mean when we bring it back down to Earth? Well, actually, it brings us to simulating gravity and physics right here in our living rooms.
The gaming leak.
Yeah, we need to touch on the massive gaming industry leak that set the internet on fire this weekend. The pre-alpha gameplay leak from EA Motive Studio for their top-secret Marvel's Iron Man project.
And the public relations response from Electronic Arts was unusually calm.
Right. Usually a studio panics when a build leaks, but EA essentially issued a statement saying, well, that didn't go as planned, but now you know what we've been building and we've got a lot more to show you.
They played it very cool.
They were super confident, and honestly, based on the footage, they had every right to be. The game is built from the ground up on Unreal Engine 5.
It's a single-player action adventure, focusing heavily on Tony Stark's technical genius. But the standout feature that everyone is analyzing is the flight mechanics.
The simulated physics of flight. Reviewers noted that the thrust momentum and aerial banking physics look entirely revolutionary.
It expands on the flight systems EA pioneered years ago in the game Anthem, but with much greater combat precision and a visceral sense of heavy metallic weight.
And this loops us perfectly back to our core theme today, generating the authentic tactile sensation of supersonic armored flight within a dense, destructible urban landscape requires an immense amount of processing.
A staggering amount.
Rather than forcing the gaming console to brute force calculate every frame of motion, Unreal Engine 5 utilizes predictive momentum algorithms and cutting-edge physics pipelines to execute this with uncompromising fidelity.
They are coding smarter physics, achieving hyperrealism through structural ingenuity rather than just demanding more raw compute power.
It really is incredible when you step back and look at the sheer scope of Sunday, August 30th, 2026.
It's been a busy week.
We are seeing lightweight 8 billion parameter AI models outsmarting the giant frontier AIs because of smarter memory architecture. We're seeing enterprise networks building physical micro-segmented vaults to contain autonomous agents.
And Google shielding our web traffic from network snoops.
Exactly. Plus Coinbase rewriting the rules of zero-risk crypto mortgages, NASA launching telescopes that hunt rogue planets by physically blocking out starlight, and EA simulating supersonic physics by outsmarting the processing pipeline.
It is a profound level of technological maturation across completely distinct industries.
And the most important thing is that you, the listener, are now armed with this vital intelligence.
Hmm.
You are fully caught up on the critical breakthroughs of the week without the information overload.
And if we look closely at how these specific technologies might intersect, it leaves us with a rather profound question for the near future.
Okay, let's hear it.
If lightweight AI models can now learn to dynamically optimize their own operations, and our network protocols are increasingly encrypting our final destinations at the OS level, how long until autonomous AI agents are the ones managing our zero-margin call mortgages and routing those complex financial transactions through micro-segmented enterprise networks entirely unseen by human eyes?
Wow.
Are we rapidly building a world where the most vital systems operate flawlessly, but entirely in the dark?
It really makes you wonder. We finally realized that pouring more concrete and piling up loose bricks wouldn't let us reach the clouds. So we got smarter. We started engineering steel frames. But now that we've built the skyscraper, well, we might just have to figure out how to navigate it with the lights turned off.
That's a great way to put it.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you on the next one.